How many friends do you have? On Facebook and Instagram, we seem popular, but who are our real friends and how can we cultivate deep, wonderful, lasting friendships? My author today is a top journalist, writer, editor, and digital producer. She is currently working at ITV. Today, we're talking about her second book, The Friendship Formula, Add Great Friends and Subtract Toxic People and Multiply Your Happiness. She is Caroline Millington. Hi, welcome back to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me again.
It's an absolute pleasure. So tell us about the friendship formula. We all want a formula in our life that works.
Yeah, exactly. I think friendship is like the most important thing that we take through our lives. Obviously, family are there from sort of the day we're born. We can't choose them ourselves. They're there. It can be complicated, but friends are the ones that we pick along the way. The friendship form was actually born out of my first book, Kindfulness. There was a chapter in it regarding friends and how to deal with toxic people and negativity, and it kind of really explored that. And that was the chapter of Kindfulness that really seemed to resonate with readers. So when discussing what was next for me with my publishers, they said, we're really keen to work on something to do with friendship, because I seem to have really tapped into the complicated world of friends, whether it's men and women or female friendship, friendships that change, the difficulties that can arise over the years, growing apart, finding new friends later in life, which I always think is such a bonus. I sat down to look at the friendship formula, which to me was how to get the most out of friendships, how to be a good friend yourself and look at your own actions and ways of life, and making sure that all your friends are serving your needs. So it's kind of the tone of Kindfulness was very much about being positively selfish and making sure you were getting what you needed out of life. I guess the friendship formula is making sure you get what you need out of your friendships and being a good friend yourself.
Exactly. So why do friendships make us happy? Why do you think it is?
Oh, I think they serve so many different purposes. Often we pick people who we feel mirror ourselves. So we'll look at people, and I guess it's a double-edged sword in a way. We'll look at people and be like, I want to be more like that person, or they inspire me, they make me laugh. It's about those that bring joy to your life and are there for you in good times and bad. But I think there's so many different friends for different reasons.
Well, let's get on to that, because it was really fun, because you wrote in a chapter about the circle of life, and it made me laugh so much because there's so many different friends.
Oh, did you go through your friend list going, that one fits there,
exactly, that one fits there. And what's really good is you say it can be any sex, so you're saying this could be male or female.
I think obviously I'm writing from a personal viewpoint. I'm a straight woman, I'm single, so a lot of it comes from me. And in the book, there is a survey, and I spoke to friends to get some other insights as well and get it from both sides. But I think it's, for me personally, it's very dangerous to try and segue friends into specific roles when it's not just about female friendship. For, you know, although that is abundantly clear, that's super important to me as a woman. There's definitely different roles of friends. So I talk about the SOS sister, who is your 3 a.m. you know, call an emergency. That's not necessarily one of my single girlfriends. That could be one of, actually is more likely to be one of my married heterosexual friends, like, who I know is like good in an emergency.
So you do have an SOS friend.
I've probably got a number.
God, I've got one who I literally can call and just cry.
Yes.
You know, and just literally sob, and she will listen to me for an hour, and then I'll say, oh God, how are you?
Yeah.
That's a really good friend.
It is. And as long as you're always going, I'm really sorry, I know, I'm having a moment. Yeah. How are you as well?
Yeah.
I was talking to someone only yesterday about a friendship that she was like, if I could cut them out, I would, but I can't. And I was like, why can't you? And she was talking about messages back and forth, and there was no investment back. So it was all about them. And I think we all have moments in our lives that are dramatic or difficult. Yeah. And we all, you know, it's mm-hmm. about being there for each other in good times and bad. So if someone needs you, yes, they're going to need more attention and probably they're not investing as much in you. But I think as long as it's balanced that when you need them, they don't make it about themselves. I talk in the book about givers and takers. And I think there is a real thing of personality, and again, it's not about gender. Personality wise, some people like to give and they like it gives them validation,
yes,
to be the helper. And yeah, some people are perhaps more dramatic and like to be the taker and the center of attention. Those are the roles they take, and if they're happy in those roles, that friendship is kind of symbiotic in a way. It works. But often what you'll find is, I guess you could say the take is slightly more narcissistic. Mm. If the one who likes to give has a little bit of an epiphany in life, I'm talking about myself now, and becomes less of a people pleaser and decides to put themselves first, that really unsettles the balance in that friendship. And the person who likes to take is like, what is going on?
Like, yeah, I know someone that dropped a friend because he said... The friend, had a lousy boyfriend. Her life was quite kind of dour. It wasn't going very well. And then suddenly she got, she lost weight. She got a boyfriend. She started saying she was going to travel. She stopped doing the same job as her. Mm. And the friend didn't want her anymore.
No. And I find it fascinating because often it makes people uncomfortable. And what I touched on earlier about it being a double-edged sword, about wanting to be attracted to people who inspire you or help you and you bond with, we compare ourselves to others. And some people are so unhappy in their own lives, they would rather surround themselves with other people who are also equally unhappy in their own lives because it makes them feel better about themselves. And it allows them to be like, oh, it's so not fair, is it? Oh, I know. And it's just a, you know, perpetuating circle of negative. Life's not fair.
Yeah, yeah.
And if one of those people steps out and goes, actually, I'm going to get my stuff together here and start living life and being more positive, they get jealous. They can be quite belittling. Are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure he's good enough? And end up putting you down very carefully because it seems like they're caring. Whereas actually, you've made them feel uncomfortable about their life choices. Because I think removing like serious mental health issues, happiness is a choice. Like, I chose to go to therapy and still go to therapy because I want to lead the best life I can and be the happiest I can be. And I know I've made people feel uncomfortable sometimes in how happy I am with my lot.
Well, also because you've changed, Caroline.
I know,
What people don't like. It's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. People like you in a box. They're that person that, you know, and then as soon as you start having your own personality or views and that, you know, I mean, it's happened to me with my family as well very much.
It can. I think people, especially if your idea of happiness isn't theirs. Mm. So for me, I'm far more confident. It's ironic because in Kindfulness, when I recorded the audio version, I was talking about there's a chapter on body image and being kind to your body. And I was like, I'm not a gym buddy, blah, blah, blah. And had to read this out. And I was like, I've got a personal trainer. I've been going to the gym for the last 6 months. I love it. It's the first time that I've built a better relationship with my body.
Yeah.
And I go for confidence.
You started liking your body more.
Basically. I've started going for confidence, to appreciate myself. Mm. I'm toning up. I haven't drastically lost weight. Mm. But I think if someone isn't the standard that society tells us to be and you're body confident, it makes people feel uncomfortable as well, because they're like, how can you be confident and actually think you're attractive when you're plus size? Because that's not what society tells us. God. And you do feel kind of bits of judgment on that, or you go to the gym but you haven't lost weight.
Yeah,
I'm not there for that. I'm there to come out feeling great about myself.
Yeah, I find that doing exercise makes me in a good mood. That's why I like
it's changed my mood.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm working on my bingo wings.
Yeah, I've got more energy.
Yeah, yeah. But it's about being strong and being happy and realizing what my body can do rather than what it can't.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes friends do question, and we do, we all do this, so it's not just, oh, my friends are judging me and I'm not judging them.
Yeah, we're all judging our friends all the time.
We do, and it's a natural thing, and I think rather than maybe judging, say, comparison of, well, that makes you happy, it wouldn't make me happy. And that's okay, because we're all different and we all have different versions of happiness.
Okay, so tell us some more of the friendships then.
Oh, so I had in here the older, wiser woman, which, again, could be a man. I think...
Or a gay man.
Or a gay man. Or a gay woman. I find it interesting. I've always met people of different ages, and especially I think in the workplace where you're no longer in your peer group, and you might have a mentor. I met up with a lovely friend of mine, Diane, recently for lunch, who I'd not seen for a couple of years, and she was a magazine editor, and she was very much a mentor for me when I was still working in magazines, and we'd kept in touch kind of a little bit, but not wholly, and then had lunch just last week, and it was so nice. She's got two grown-up daughters. I don't think she's old enough to be my mum, don't worry. But even if she was, it's irrelevant. And I think sometimes having people in your life who are much younger or much older than you, it brings a different perspective, it brings a different experience. And for me, one of my sort of older, wiser women, she's not even that much older, she's like in her mid-40s, is my friend Frankie. And she definitely has given me food for thought when it comes to friendships, because we are so opposite. On paper, we not shouldn't be friends, but we are.
Tell me what the differences are. Tell me.
Because I think her attitude, and this is what she said when I was talking about difficult people recently, she always thinks, well, it's not me, so what's wrong with them? Her initial first thought is, well, what's their problem? Because it's clearly not me, because I'm wonderful. And I've really adopted that as a mantra now. Obviously, you've got to be self-aware, because sometimes it is you. You've got to, you know, admit when you, you know, make mistakes or you're not dealing with something right. Whereas I think up until going to therapy, writing Kindfulness, I was always, it's me. What have I done wrong? I need to be better. I'm not enough. To be able to flip it on its head and realise that sometimes it is just other people. You can't change them. You can't change
their
opinion.
Yeah, they're having a shit time. They're having a bad day. They've got the attitude problem, yeah.
And often when things go a bit wrong, especially in a friendship, it's nothing to do with you and it's something else in their life. And they maybe can't communicate it or they're trying to deal with it, and you might find out afterwards. For me, it's having that respect to the friendship, even if you don't want to open up to say, I'm struggling with something at the moment, it's not you, or I can't see you because I'm actually having a hard time. And just have that respect of informing without ghosting someone, which, you know, I talk about in the book as well. When people just disappear from your life, if you're very close friends, and then come back and say, well, I had all this drama going on, I didn't want to bog you down.
But if you'd just done one text saying, just to let you know, you, as you say, why it's happening, then you'd be fine.
And I've been that person when I've had anxiety in the past, which has manifested itself in different ways. And it hasn't been, I wouldn't say I suffer from anxiety, but I have definitely been through periods of my life where I have let friends down and I haven't wanted to go to that social engagement because I've not been in a good enough place. But I forced myself to be that honest because I didn't want to just be absolutely flaky and say, I'm not feeling well. I'm not in a good place at the moment. I'm really sorry I can't come. Can I see you one-on-one, or can I'll make it up to you?
Nice.
And I think even though I'm sure they were disappointed, I hopefully appreciate my honesty, because it's horrible when you write something down or you're that honest, you're then having to be honest with yourself that you're not dealing with something. So for me, it's kind of trying to keep lines of communication open, even if you don't open up, so to speak. One of the other friendship groups in my circle of life is like the popcorn and Prosecco pal. So it's the ones that, you know, you might not have a deep and meaningful with, but you love to have a night out with, or you go to the cinema and you chat about work, or you chat about kind of top line things. And that's, we need people of all levels of friendship, not just deep and meaningfuls all the time, you know, getting bogged down. You need some friends who bring out the frivolous side of you. So yeah,
the silly side.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of having that smorgasbord of friendships that you know, it's a proper nice pick and mix, I think.
Excellent. So who else is in the list?
I also had the flighty friend.
Yeah.
In and out of your life, you might not see them very often, but you wouldn't cut them out. You don't want to get rid of them. They're there. They're busy, and you know that you'll always pick up where you left off,
yes,
which I think is really nice.
I've got friends like that that I don't see for years, but because we've been such good friends in the past or whatever, there's no hard feelings, and we realise we've just got different lives at the moment.
And it's enough. And I think as long as you're both on the same page, I think often one of the things I discovered writing the book is that many friendships are actually not reciprocated, as in you think you're close to them, and they think that you're someone they know, but isn't a friend.
Oh, God.
I know.
That's
so
awful.
I know. And I had a friend talk to me about this. I think it was last year, how he would always get on really well with this other guy and want to see them more often because enjoyed their time, and would always text, go, oh, we should go out. We should meet up. Let's do this. And then I'd go, yes, but never follow through on it. So it was quite clear that they were in different circles. They'd put each other in different circles. So obviously in the friendship formula, I talk about friendship circles.
So can you explain further about
so
that?
So the friendship circles, it's very much, there's a lot of research done by Robin Dunbar, who's like an anthropologist, and has studied relationships and friendships in great detail. And the friendship circles is that we have, or we can maintain 150 relationships at one time.
Wow.
Which seems like a lot.
Sounds like loads.
But they are in different circles. So in your inner circle, you have a handful, so it might be five people, which I think most of us have those kind of, I always said, look on your phone and see who the people you text, or who's at the top of your WhatsApp group, like list.
Yeah.
And those are your closest friends. And then in the next circle out, you will add another 15 on. And those are the ones that you might meet for dinner once a month, or you speak to regularly, but you don't invest as much of your time in. Mm-hmm. And then the next circle out are those that you keep in touch with, but don't see very often at all. So Christmas cards, you might meet once a year or something.
And or if you're having a massive landmark birthday.
Yeah, big birthdays, it might be someone that if it's a wedding, so a special occasion. And then I guess, you know, out there on the periphery are people that you've known for years that might just be on Facebook, like old school friends and things.
Yeah, exactly.
And the things with a friendship circle that I've noticed over the years is people, you move people probably subconsciously, you don't necessarily realise it at the time, but you move people in and out of your friendship circles dependent on your situation. So you start a new job or you go to university, you make a bunch of new friends. So they end up in one of those circles. And one of the interesting things was that, say you're single, so you've got five people in your inner circle. When you have a relationship, they replace two.
Oh, no.
And they take a place in that inner circle. So you lose friends.
Oh, my God.
And they might not be lost forever, but they might be bumped into the next circle along. Because we've only got a finite number of hours in the day. And I was saying, it's like, if you're at work, slash also commuting, and then sleep, and then you've got this, 6 hours, who do you speak to, or who do you go out of your way to see? Who are you willing to, your spare time, who do you invest it in? That you will walk away thinking, I had a really nice time, and not, I'm exhausted from that negativity or them just being dramatic.
You just said it. Let's touch on the toxics.
Yes.
How do we know who's toxic?
I think the biggest indicator is tapping into how you feel when you leave them. Not just did you have a nice time, but look at the way they make you feel. So what do they bring to your party? And it's not just about compliments saying how wonderful you are. You know, that's not what friendship's about. But sharing conversations, listening as well as talking. For me, one of the biggest indicators is, when it's a friendship, and I think it's a real red flag, is passing judgment and belittling. So putting you down, and I mentioned earlier, it can seem like it's because they care about you, but actually, are they interfering? Are they passing judgment on a career choice or a boyfriend or a partner because they are concerned, or is it because your work or your partner are taking you away from them? Because I think it is difficult, and we do have to manage, you know, differences in our lives. But if someone isn't so self-aware as well, that when they see you, they just moan the entire time and don't even ask how you are. I think when that happens over and over again, you end up thinking, I'm going to stop investing. There's no point even opening up because I just don't feel validated.
Well, also, they don't ask you how you are, so you never get a chance to.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are like your top end, but obviously.
So you're feeling. So when you leave them, you're feeling a bit drained, a bit like, what was that all about? You sort of. And so how do you? But if this person could be a best friend.
Yeah.
How can you get rid of them nicely?
I think you've got a couple of choices, and it depends on how long it's been going on for, who they are in your life, the situation, because obviously if they're a work colleague, you can't just cut them out because you've got to sit next to them every day.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so, it applies to family members as well. All of this does. So I think you can either have a conversation, which would be a starting point if they were a really close friend, to say, I know you were asking about this, or I know you mentioned that. It actually hurt me, or it made me feel upset or worried, because I think the one thing to remember is when you're having difficult conversations, no one can ever question how things make you feel.
Mm-hmm. But you're being very vulnerable with them, yeah, though, aren't you?
Which, you are.
You know, it's quite scary. Some people, you just don't, you know. But I suppose if you're meant to be good friends, then you can be vulnerable.
You can. And I think, for me, it's a bit of a yellow card warning of flag it, that their behaviour or their questioning about something upset you. And do it when you're not feeling upset, so you're calm, for a start.
Yeah. So don't get angry.
No, and don't do it in... Do it in person, if possible.
And don't do it when you're drunk.
Oh, gosh, no, never do that.
Yeah.
If they continue that behaviour, then they don't have your best interest at heart because you've already flagged it.
Yeah. So then what's the next step?
So the second choice would be
phase
them out. Or the second step would be if they continue to do this, phase them. So, for instance, if you're used to seeing them one-on-one, but you come away feeling awful, but you've got a group of shared friends, see them within the shared friendship group, but don't see them one-on-one. So you're phasing them into a different... You kind of re-establish the friendship. Sometimes they don't even realise you've done it.
Yeah.
Because they still see you.
Yeah, yeah.
So they get what they need, but you're doing it on your terms.
Mm.
So that's a kind of a nice compromise if you're...
What if you don't want... If you really think it's winding me up, I want them out, you know?
Then you just have to make that difficult decision to be, this doesn't benefit me anymore. Do it in person, or if it's too much, send them a email maybe, not on text, that's a bit short and cruel. But maybe send them, or write them a letter. I know before I've had to send someone a message and said, I feel like our friendship's taken a bit of a bashing because she'd made me feel terrible about myself and really disrespected me. So I said, I need to have some space. She was like, I understand, I'll give you all the space you need. And that friendship went from inner circle to outer circle. So they're still in my life. I still have a lot of love for her, but it wasn't servicing me. It wasn't, I couldn't keep taking, like,
has
I couldn't
she,
keep
she
giving.
Changed at all? Do you know, have you heard?
I don't think so. Mm. And I think often these things happen because people have their own issues. So it wasn't me, it was her. And I'd done so much I could to help her, but eventually when it's impacting on you and your friendship, you have to draw a line somewhere. And I think you can do these things without being a complete bitch. Like, you don't have to do things from anger. but sometimes it is better to walk away. Mm. Someone I know recently had a text and was like, oh, and I was like, what's wrong? And it was someone that she tried to cut out, and I think they'd either had a conversation or message, and the person had said, I want to see you, I want to talk about this. And she was like, I don't want to. And I was like, you don't have to. Just no. Message back and say, I really feel our friendship has changed. It's really sad, but I'm moving on, and I wish you nothing but the best in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, you can let people go with love. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily make them a bad person. They might be going through a bad situation and they cannot help their behaviour. But maybe...
God, you're so nice, Caroline. Oh,
but maybe it would be a wake-up call. But the whole point
don't
is...
Don't you ever just think she's a fucking bitch?
Yeah, occasionally. But then I don't have friends like that who... I've known people like that in the past who would go out of their way to basically destroy any joy. They weren't just like joy hoovers. They were just like, would go out of their way and learn that actually it wasn't me, it was them, and I could just remove them from my life. But they weren't close friends, so that was easier. I think if it happens with someone who you say is your best friend, it's heartbreaking. And I think for some, I don't want to gender stereotype and say some men, but I think for many women, the breakup and heartbreak of a friendship ending can be worse than a relationship ending.
Yeah, because tell me about that.
I think...
Is it because it's a longevity thing? You've been friends with them maybe for so long.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you've always championed each other, you've always thought each other's great, you know what I mean? And it's also so... like love affairs are kind of very dramatic, up and down, and then they finish. But a friendship, you expect loyalty, don't you?
Yeah. I think there's some stats in the friendship formula about the average, I want to say female, friendship lasts for 16 years, and many of them last longer than relationships.
Yeah. I've got a friend since I was 4, another since I was 16. It's amazing.
Have you found as well with those that, one, there's a danger sometimes they become a historical friendship. So your friendship is based on the past. So you reminisce more than look forward. Mm-hmm. But that's okay because you love each other. Mm. And also with long-term friendships, just like long-term relationships, they change over the years.
Yes. It's to do with stages in life. And that's another thing I want to talk about, because you said, you know, people go off on different tangents, and that is the big, I think that is a destroyer or the changer of relationships. That's what makes it change. Like getting married, getting divorced, whatever things can happen to you. Sorry.
I think
different job, different country, or you don't like their partner. Yeah. That can be a real problem.
Your life priorities change and your life paths, like you go in different directions. Mm. I think for me, the friendships that I made in my probably like university, early into late 20s, everyone was kind of on the same page, especially London-based friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously where I live, where I work, we're all doing the same thing, which was moaning about the fact we couldn't find men and drinking too much wine and moaning about work. Yeah. And that lasted for about a decade.
And having as much fun as possible.
Yeah, exactly. But your priorities do change. And I think that can have a negative impact on your friendships. But I think you have to look at why you're friends with that person and what you still have in common. My best friend, Ruth, and I met on the first day of university. And she's still my best friend.
That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. She married her now husband, David, who we also met on the first day of university.
Oh, my God.
When we were 23. Wow. So, and they live up north, and they've got two gorgeous boys who are my godsons. Our lives are very different. But ultimately, is it like you keep reinvesting in that friendship?
Because, is she the one you can cry to?
Yes. I haven't cried on her for ages.
Well, that's because you're happy.
I know, I was like, actually, I'm so happy I've not had to fend her up crying. Yeah. But she's the one that's listened to me repeat the same kind of sob stories for decades. She's the one that's picked me up. You know,
who's never judged you.
Never judged. And if she has, she can give me some tough love that I will take from her, but never from a bad place, just trying to be a bit practical. But our lives are completely different, and our friendship is completely different, because obviously we'd you know, we'd go out at university and have fun, yeah. and like yeah. it was just quite not frivolous but fun. Yeah. And then of course they have children. Mm. I'd spend a lot more time going up there than they would coming down.
Where
here.
Are they in the north?
They're Chesterfield way.
Yeah.
So quite far up. But now they we both reinvest in it and we don't see each other as much as we used to.
No, of course.
And that's geography. Life. And we've probably got more in common on paper with certain other friends of ours. Mm. So for me, it would be other single women in their yeah. sort of 30s, 40s. Mm. And who like more, traveling more like solo traveling. Mm. And for her, it's perhaps other parent like working mums.
Yeah.
But as she said to me, we were talking about it recently about sort of making other friends that... You will make friends as a mum because they're mums yes. and you have that in yeah. common, yeah. but it doesn't actually necessarily translate into a long-term, deep and meaningful friendship
yeah.
because...
Yeah, you really need those friends, yes. I tell you, because I've had children and you really need those nappy friends.
Yeah.
What you can be really boring with. I'd be talking about nappies for hours and it's just not me, but I had to go through that phase, you know, and I've probably got two close friends out of that
exactly.
time.
So you kind of find... Mm. And there's... a lovely term that was coined, I don't know if coined originally by, but Taylor Swift wrote about, which was situationships.
Oh.
So the friends you make when you're in a situation. So often you'll make friends at work, but when you leave that job, you might have hung out with 10 people. You'd carry two of those friendships yes. forward.
I've really enjoyed, I think the work relationships I found really rewarding. In fact, I met my husband through work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you meet people that you never would have met. You know, so it's so good for you, you know, or even yeah. at college, you know, I went to college when I came back to London 10 years ago and it was in Lambeth. Everyone in it was very diverse, you
yes.
know, and that was so good for me. Just, you know, meeting people from different backgrounds with different attitudes is keeps your mind open.
I don't think friendship should always be how much have you got in common? Do you like the same films? Do you like the film? I love meeting people who... Mm. For me, some of my friends are so different to me or their careers are very different, their outlook on life, because it brings, I'm like, what are you bringing to the party to open my eyes?
Yeah.
What can you introduce me to? Not just, oh, let's go and see another movie that we'd always see. Like, let's go and talk about something completely different. Like I guess I look to friends to, you have the normal stuff that you can just do that day by day.
Yeah.
But what excites me about meeting new people, I guess, and some of my friendships is challenging me or making me think different or bringing new ideas to the party.
Totally.
So,
yeah.
And I think we can get trapped in friendships that's just kind of
same
old. It's
and
very
so
safe.
Many people, crowds of people, I mean, that go, you know, always just go around the same people, you know, from uni or from, you know, home and or you know or even just hang around with their family and it's just not the way to be. You've got to meet people who challenge you, who will make you feel stimulated.
And also meeting people from, I think for me, I guess living in London in particular and working media has been so beneficial on this, meeting people who are from different religions and different cultures and different backgrounds and having conversations and learning and being open to different ways of life because otherwise I just gone my life would have been so boring if I'd stayed in a very middle class white kind of boring life for me. I'm like, no, I want my my world that I've created for myself to be full of, literally full of colour and full of fun and different beliefs, because I think sometimes having friends you can disagree with respect, having debates or differences of opinion, as long as it's done respectfully, is the best thing, because it either reinforces your own opinion or makes you look at things differently. And sometimes we can live in a bubble of, you surround yourself with people with all the same views as you, and it can be very naive to the way you look at the world.
And lastly, tell us about online, because you are a digital producer, you know a lot about it. What is it about, you know, I've got a friend who literally has stopped looking at Facebook now because she has such problems with, you know, envy and jealousy. And also, aren't there annoying people that just put every aspect of their life? I mean, someone I knew put a family... She has an open account to the public, and she is quite a public figure. She put a family funeral on Instagram. No. And I thought that was disgusting. I mean, you know...
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I went to my friend Katie... who I write about in the book, who passed away, sadly, 9 years ago. I went to her memorial service earlier this year, which is an incredible day. And afterwards, I took a picture of the front of the order of service and posted that up against, like, a beautiful blue sky because it was a gorgeous day.
That was celebrating her.
Yes, to celebrate her. Yeah, but I think there's times and place. And... I do think sometimes people really misjudge what should and shouldn't be shared on social media. I find social media fascinating because I was a really early adopter of, I mean, years ago now, MySpace, retro, and then Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and have ended up creating a career out of it. Didn't even exist when I started writing. So I love it, but I think I have... hopefully quite a sane view of it and a very aware view of it. We choose, so there's certain rules I have with my phone, so I don't have push notifications.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
Apart from text and WhatsApp.
I'm the same. That's it. Exactly the same.
I don't understand why you would.
Yeah.
Although I do spend a lot of time on social media scrolling.
But that's your own choice.
I'm choosing, yes. Yeah. I would also say you are in charge of the accounts you follow. You curate that. You wouldn't sit in front of a TV for, say, 6 hours a day, because you might be on social that much, and watch programmes you don't like or that make you feel shit.
Okay, but what if, like, I've got a son who was saying, oh, God, I can't defriend this girl.
You can mute them. Okay. So they don't show up in your feed, but they don't know you've muted them.
Okay, I'll tell
So, him. Yeah, so you go into your settings on Facebook. Yeah. You don't have to unfollow.
What about Insta? Can you do it on Insta?
I don't think you can on Insta, but you can unfollow them,
yeah,
I guess. And if you don't... If you don't comment or like any of their posts, the algorithm will notice and they won't come up as much.
Okay, great.
So that's always good. On Twitter, you can mute people as well, unfollow or mute them.
Okay.
So it's particularly on Facebook, where it might be Facebook, friends and family, so it gets a bit
politely,
icky. You can just mute them so their posts never come up. The one thing you do risk is if they put some big news out there.
Yes.
But my advice is always blame the algorithm and just be like, well, Facebook obviously are not delivering the people that I want to see. I'm so sorry I missed your amazing news.
Okay.
And flag it to family members. Oh, if they post anything, I should
know. What about making friendships in social media settings?
I find it fascinating because I think there's people that I follow are going to sound slightly like fangirling, that I'm like, I wish they were my friend in real life, because on social media, I love their attitude. I love what they represent.
There's so many great women out there. Basically.
And it is all the women, basically. Yeah. I'm like, please be my friend.
Yeah.
And then especially when they follow me back and I'm like, oh, we're nearly friends. We're nearly friends. And I have to not slide into the DMs asking them to meet me. I think it's a lovely way to find like-minded people, to really champion women. For me, Instagram and Twitter as well. There's a really nice community spirit on social media. If you can move away from the trolls and ignore the negativity, it's a wonderful place to find people.
I've made one of my best friends from Twitter. She followed me.
You just got chatting.
Yeah, she followed me on Radio Gorgeous and we started talking, and she's a great friend now.
That's so nice. And you meet up in real life.
Yeah.
So someone
she's been on holiday with me.
That's so nice. Yeah. See, it can happen. There's a couple of examples I put in the book, and one of them was I think I tweeted about, I was going to Bangkok with another friend and it was like, where do we go?
Yeah.
And an expat was like, oh, go here, go here. We followed each other. And then she's like, well, I'll show you around. We met up with Anna and we did the usual, we'll meet for a drink and then obviously just see how the night goes, because you don't know how you're going to click.
Yeah.
And we, like, she took us out. We were out till like 2 in the morning. And we've stayed in touch ever since. She's actually back in the UK but lives up north, so I've not seen her in person. But we are proper friends now because we're on friends on Facebook, which my Facebook's private. So I'm like, unless I know you in real life.
Tell us about private Facebook, because I'm obviously, because my job, again, it's public. You know?
Yeah.
Can you do private Facebook?
So I just, you make your settings private. For me, if you tag friends in pictures, it shows up on their feed unless they don't allow it. If someone posts a photograph of me, it will appear on their feed, but it won't appear on my feed until I've allowed it to. And I don't know why I decided my Facebook should be private, because everything else is open. But it just felt kind of nice to just have something.
Do you still use Facebook? Do you think Facebook's still relevant?
I use it kind of to keep an eye on people in my life. Like, it's more where I put groups of pictures for like an album. I like the fact memories come up on there.
Yeah.
So I post groups of pictures, so yesterday or early this week, I posted the photos I took at the weekend when I was home for Father's Day, because they're then up on there for life. So I kind of like that. I think there's a big age difference. So the younger people in my life, so godchildren and my friends who are sort of in their 20s are not really on Facebook as much.
Apart from, again, I know this because I hang around with younger people because I've got teenagers. They say events is fabulous for Facebook.
And there's a lot of good fan pages on there as now. So I think Facebook's good for community. It changes all the time. So it's good for community and finding like-minded people if you're into a particular TV show or but I get most of my news not from Facebook anymore, because there used to be kind of a news feed on it, but I get a lot of my news from Twitter. So I go on, see what's trending and look at all the moments.
I find you learn things before it's ever out there. It's amazing.
So it's kind of, for me, news and sort of real world what's going on is Twitter. Friends and family photos and announcements is Facebook. And Instagram is that feel good. My feed is very curated, a lot of it. Obviously your friends, and also mostly women and men who I respect to admire and want to follow. And I guess it's kind of a really nice feminist movement and people fixing each other's crowns rather than tearing each other down. So,
well, that's exactly what your book's about. And thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and talking from your heart.
Thank you for having me.
The friendship formula, add great friends, subtract toxic people and multiply your happiness, is written by Caroline Millington and published by Head of Zeus. You've been a brilliant guest. Thank you so much for coming. You'll always find interesting women on Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. I've had a great time.